Well, hello everybody. Ski season has ended, and like the groundhog, I've peeked my head out of my eyrie here in my high desert oasis of Boise, Idaho. And Jay Flem Sports Report is back for more of 2026. For all of you wondering where the heck he was for the Masters, well, like I said, ski season was finishing up. I had to attend the Hall of Fame induction ceremony and the International Skiing History Awards. Both were absolutely wonderful, and we will close out the ski season a little bit later. But for right now, we are going to get right to what everybody really wants to hear about. They want to hear about our wrap-up of the Masters, and they want to hear all about what we think the golf season is going to look like as we hurtle into major season full speed. And of course, with us is Ryan Ballingee. He is the founder, he's the owner, he is the president, CEO, and all things great and grand muckety muck of Golf News Net and Jay Flem Sports Report here on iHeartRadio. So, Ryan, welcome back to Jay Flem Sports Report.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
So glad to see you again, buddy. Before we get started, real quick, how are you hitting the ball?
I played today. Hit it pretty okay. Could be a little bit better, but no complaints at all.
First rounds for me this weekend. Okay, I did do a little bit of practicing. I'm going to get out and sample some of Idaho's prettiest. So that'll be a lot of fun. We'll talk about golf travel again very soon. It's going to be a big episode, everybody. We may have as many as four parts to this one with Ryan leading off. So let's get right down to it. Rory, once again, with feeling. And, as a sportsman, you say the rarity of seeing somebody go back to back winning majors 2 years in a row. And then, your heart warms with the fact that it is golf's Wunderkind once ago, and now golf's, patron saint doing all things to keep the game bubbling in this time of live, which hopefully will be coming to an end. So tell us your reflections of Rory's win this year.
Well, I mean, he did it in the most modern, current Rory fashion possible, right? I mean,
Yes.
it's kind of the reflection of his. I mean, that whole 72 holes is a reflection of his career, right? The first two majors he won were by a zillion. I mean, the
Yes, by
U.S.
eight
Open and
times.
both were 8 by 8 at the U.S. Open at Congressional, and then at Kiawah, the PGA, and then. Closer call, well, a closer call on the PGA that went back to back right after the Open Championship in 2014. One was, the Open at Hoylake was a little bit more dominant, not 8 shots, but
A
pretty cleanly,
comfortable four
pretty
shot victory.
comfortable. And then, he had the challenge from Ricky Fowler and Phil Mickelson in the dark at Valhalla. So over time, it got closer and closer until, 11 years goes by and he beats Justin Rose in a playoff. For that final piece of the career Grand Slam. So I guess it wasn't going to swing back the other way immediately and go back to the Rory of a decade and a half ago. So
If it ever does.
no, and again, only gets harder. And very interestingly enough that he played literally the best golf the first 2 days, deserved his half dozen shot lead, and then nature took its course. Someone went firing, and that guy was Cam Young. He played a great round on Saturday and got himself into the lead, amazingly into the lead as
That's right. It was not a wire-to-wire win for Rory. It doesn't
Rory
count because it was
tried
clean.
to nurse it a little bit. I mean, he was tied after round one, and I know some of our purists don't care to call that a wire to wire, but either way, I don't care. In the
Well, there's
end,
two. There's wire-to-wire no ties, and there's
and there's
wire-to-wire
wire to wire
with
with
ties.
ties, but either way, he gets there in the end. And the interesting thing to me, I think, was on Sunday that the seas just kind of parted a little bit for him. It's not like he played especially well for the first, I don't know, half dozen holes on Sunday. It was okay. But I mean, that he and Cam Young both made a mess of six. Cam Young then made a mess of seven, and Rory didn't. And that kind of set things in motion for him to at least kind of get past Cam Young. And then it seemed like Justin Rose's to win. I mean, he was too clear. and seemed like everything was heading in the direction of this amazing kind of culminating win and all of the painful experiences he has had at Augusta National. And then he gets the amen corner and just
Amen corner
blunders the
does what
whole
amen
thing.
corner does.
Yeah, just kind of, I mean, messes up a great second shot into 13, and that was kind of all she wrote. And meanwhile, McIlroy plays from behind him, hits a bold shot into 12 to what? I don't know, 10 feet,
Oh, it was
8 feet.
exquisite, that iron shot.
What a gorgeous shot. Pays it off. 13, easy money. The tournament seems over. And he had to make it interesting on 18, of course, but the tournament was effectively over. Now, the good news is that ball went a foot past the edge of that tree that he was directly to the his left after his tee shot landed on 18. Otherwise, I think we might have had a maybe different story, but it didn't work out that way. In the end, he winds up winning, goes back to back, fourth guy ever to go back to back. I think the most interesting back to back in a way. I mean, Tiger going to, so I mean, no one in Masters history went back to back in their 17th and 18th attempts. That's pretty incredible. So, each of those four people who have that distinction, Jack, Faldo, Tiger, now Rory, really do have a compelling mini story to how it happened. I mean, Faldo's both were in playoffs. Tiger's was to complete their career Grand Slam in a single year and then do it again, just to prove the point. And, Nicklaus did it. One was in a playoff, but in a time when he and Arnold Palmer were really the two guys that mattered in that tournament. I realized that Gary Player was sort of in that mix, but I mean, the tournament was defined by that rivalry. So really, really interesting, really compelling kind of different stories between the guys.
And fascinating to watch coming down the stretch again, as we had so many horses that were all bunched up, and then finally they did fall away like leaves as Rory did what he had to do. He came through in the clutch on the par fives, and this time he didn't make the big mistake in Amen Corner.
Yeah, I mean he played it brilliantly. I mean he made a mess of it on Saturday, and I think he was, especially on 11, very keen to not make that mistake again. And I think he sensed an opportunity with a shot he felt somewhat eerily comfortable with on 12. And I think it's more comfortable for him to hit that shot to the far back right flag than anywhere else in the green. He just seems to like it better. I mean it kind of opens up over there in a weird way, even though you got to take on more of the water, obviously. But he executed it, and he wasn't going to be afraid, and he pulled it off, and I think that was what he needed to kind of finish it off.
It was spellbinding to see what he did do the first 2 days. But it's like Dan Jenkins used to say, okay, you can tell that a guy is not using steroids because, as you said earlier, nature does have a way of jumping in. And what that usually means is that a guy's not going to have a perfect ball striking day all 4 days. Okay, there's going to be that one day where he's going to struggle with his swing or his timing or both, and he's going to have to ham and egg it around and keep a 75 to a 72 kind of thing. And that's exactly what Rory kind of sort of did. He kept a 75 to a 73, not what you want to do on moving day, but he was still in the lead with Cam Young. And then he went out and he played a fine round on Sunday, on the last group, knowing what he had to do and then executing. So it's back to back, and it was great to see that little bit of history. So, what do you think now, looking forward?
What about Rory or just everything, or where do you want to start?
Oh, both. Let's start with Rory and Aronimink. Any chance that we're going to see Rory go 2 for 2?
Mean, it's a golf course that should suit him, his strength, which is getting off the tee. It's incredible to me that he's in his mid to late 30s and still hitting the ball 320 yards off the tee, at one average, this season, which is amazing. But I mean, Aronimink lines up very well for the way he plays. When they had the BMW Championship here a few years ago as part of the rotation around the Evans Scholar Cities, it was a course that clearly would suit a guy that was strong off the tee. And I think he can feel very comfortable playing in a tournament like that. I mean, I know he has pulled off all of them, right? But the PGA just seemed, I mean, and the Masters just seemed to line up the best with his game. And I don't think he would disagree that a Ronnemaek would could work very well for him. Now, I think it works well for a lot of players, which makes
Yes.
it, you know, makes it an interesting venue. But I don't see a reason why he can't go 2 for 2. He's got to play a really, really good game. I mean, Matt Fitzpatrick's been fabulous last month and a half, and Scottie Scheffler seems to have found his game again. So you've got Cam Young who can beat the ever living hell out of the ball. So you got some names out there that have certainly are game to test whatever McIlroy's going to throw at him.
You know, you mentioned Scheffler, okay? He came on like gangbusters at the end. Can you tell us a little bit about what happened that got him off to such the poor start that he couldn't recover?
I mean, I don't think that Thursday was not a poor round. I mean, he played pretty well on Thursday, in my view. Had an eagle on 2, birdie on 3, and then just could not build off of it. But also, the golf course, he had it late in the day. It was pretty firm. It was playing tougher in the back hours of that first day. Friday was really the telltale. You know, he really should have been probably, instead of 12 back, no worse than, I don't know, 5 back. I mean, he played well enough to do that, but
And just couldn't score.
the putts just wouldn't fall. He was missing on the low side all day on Friday, and that kind of put him behind the eight ball. I mean, 12 shots, a lot of shots, and he still almost got there. And I think, you know, he kind of just figured out kind of what the speeds needed to be for Saturday and Sunday. And just took his usual Scottie Scheffler approach. I'll take my birdies where I can get them nice and easy and don't press the issue on anything else. And that was almost good enough. That's pretty crazy to play. Really, I mean, and I like to say you have to play 45 good hole, really good holes to win a major. And he did that. He did play 45 really good holes. It was just unfortunately the other 27 weren't up to snuff for him to win it.
I think, though, that he fits a Ronnemaek like a glove. It is a quintessential Donald Ross course from 1928 with particularly curvy greens that will eliminate a good portion of the field who doesn't putt well on particularly curvy greens. Okay, there's some elephants buried under some of those greens. It is also hilly. Okay, there is a lot of up and down at a Ronnemaek. And I think that that combination is going to really favor the best ball strikers and longest ball strikers combined. Now, what can you tell us about what you hear about what Kerry Hague is going to do for the setup? Is he going to try to turn it into a US Open venue where 5, 6 under wins, or is he going to let them have some room to go 14, 15, 16 under?
I don't know. I don't have that. I've not had that conversation. Although Carrie looked at my LinkedIn profile not too long ago, so shout out to him. But I get the sense they're going to let it play a little bit closer to 10 or 12 under par. Just get the sense that that's the way they're going to go with it. Now that said, the last time we saw Ross and Oak Hill at the PGA, they made it pretty tough. And it
Yes,
played pretty tough. Now it
I
was cold.
remember.
It played colder, right? It was more
Well,
difficult the
that's not
first 2
just.
days, but and we are in the middle of a heat wave in the northeastern United States right now. I mean, relatively speaking to this time of year, so it's probably going to play pretty firm and pretty fast without doing a whole lot to it, and that could make scoring pretty difficult. That would be the one caveat I have about all this is if they choose to embrace what the weather has been here in this portion of the country the last 45 days or so. After a really, really, really cold winter, it has gone the whole other way. And that makes me think they may at least consider embracing the difficulty that they could very easily present if they don't really do a whole lot to the golf course from here.
When's the last time you saw a Ronnemaek?
I guess that BMW championship, right? That would have been the last time I saw it.
And who's been doing the touch-up work for the golf course?
No idea. Honestly, none. I know Gil Hanse and his team were working on it the last time they did anything to it.
I would
So
imagine that they would go back to them too.
I would assume they would bring him back in for whatever kind of alterations they were going to make here. But the work that they did leading into, that was kind of unveiled at the BMW Championship, I thought was great. I mean, it's the playing corridors are pretty wide. It's meant to look way less tree bound or tree lined than maybe you
It
might
used to
remember
be
from the
before
early
that.
2000s. So, to that sense, I think that they've got to think about trying to make it a little bit tougher around the green complexes, make them a little bit firmer, make the runoffs be a little bit more severe, make the greens play effectively smaller, because these guys, if they can just bang it around off the tee, they might tear this place apart if there's nothing to stop them at the greens. And like you said, being a Ross design, you might as well accentuate that.
So now tell us, we've got our big names that we usually talk about, our Shoffleys, our Abergs, our Schefflers, our McIlroys. But who are some dark horses, and our Fitzpatricks, who are some dark horses that are coming on to watch for, especially at a place where the PGA Championship is being held, somewhat friendlier than a major that the US Open or even at the British, and someplace where your rank and file tour member might rise to the top. Who are you looking at for sleeper picks?
I mean, I wouldn't consider either of these guys sleepers now because they're both inside the top 40 in the world, but they may be lesser known. Minwoo Lee is having himself a very, very good year. He was not good at the Masters. I don't know what happened there. He seemed very excited about the week of, but just didn't perform. But I mean, he's got a great short game and he hits the ever-living heck out of the ball. That should be a pretty decent little combination for Ronnemaek. And then I think Jake Knapp's going to have himself a really good PGA Championship. I mean, he's one of the top three players on the PGA Tour in strokes gained period this year. He's having a fabulous year. He plays great pretty much every time out. He's gone from 105th in the world at the start of the year to 37th in the world now. He has really turned it on this year after a tough year last year. Unfortunately, his long-term girlfriend passed away kind of out of nowhere, and I have a feeling that kind of event has a big impact on your life. But he has spun forward, and done very well this year, and I like him as an outsider kind of guy, to do very well at this PGA Championship.
I've got my eyes on Sepp Straka, and I have to say, Hao Tong Li has a habit of playing very well in majors. You've got to watch out for him, especially as the last two majors are being played at links courses. The US Open is going to be at venerable old Shinnecock, and the Open Championship will be at one of the royalest of all the royals, Birkdale.
I think another guy I would throw out there for at least the PGA is Marco Penge. Englishman came over here last or for this season, played great on the DP World Tour last year, got himself into the top 30 in the world at the tail end of last year. He hits a ball so hard. If he could just get himself in position off the tee, he can play good wedge ball and get himself pretty close to a lot of flags and play pretty smart. He's got the years on. He's not particularly young. He's not particularly old either. So he's got enough experience to kind of know better in this major championship setting. So I also like his game quite a bit. And it's been really nice to see him blossom on the PGA Tour.
We're talking with Ryan Ballinger here on Jay Palema Sports Report on Golf Newsnet and iHeartRadio. Very happily pondering the future majors for this golf season that are really terrific golf courses all around the globe. Now, tell us, before we get to Shinny and Birkdale, who are the rookies that you have your eye on that are having the rookie of the year-ish type of year so far?
We really haven't had a lot of guys that are pure rookies, let's put it in that sense, of guys who are having fabulous years. But Jacob Bridgman is in his second year and is playing great. He already won at Riviera in a signature event for his first PGA Tour win. He's played pretty really well this year. I mean, there's a stat that I like to trot out around the Masters that basically 20 of the last 22 Masters champions have averaged 1.5 strokes gained per round in the calendar year leading into the Masters. So the 3 months, January, February, March, and the first week of April leading into the Masters. He was one of those 12 guys. And he had showed, I thought he acquitted himself very well for a guy who doesn't have Masters experience. I think he's probably my guy that I am most interested in from a little bit of a different perspective. Michael Brennan won the Bank of Utah Championship in his third ever PGA Tour start, and he did it as a sponsor exemption for coming off of PGA Tour Americas, where he was a dominant player. He was going to go to the Korn Ferry Tour this year, and instead of going to the Korn Ferry Tour, he just won a PGA Tour event. And he hits the ball so hard. I mean, extremely hard. 190, 195 mile per hour ball speed. It's really impressive. And he's got a really, really good game. And I'm very interested to see as he learns the PGA Tour schedule. And because he has access to all of the majors, at least currently, as far as I know, and he'll certainly be at the PGA, having that access, how can he step up his game quickly in an environment where he probably wasn't expecting to be there 6 months ago, and now he's in all of these different events. So I like his game quite a bit too. It's just a pure power game.
Excellent. Well, I'm getting very excited for Shinnecock and Birkdale. Okay, two of my favorites all around the world. I've played Shinnecock before. I've covered now two US Opens there. And it is just one of the most magnificent golf spots on the planet. And it just creates one dramatic moment after another, sometimes surreal, sometimes crazy. Like when they don't water the greens enough. But once again, okay, it's going to be the scene of a phenomenal US Open. It's also going to be Coachella for CEOs, and there's going to be a lot of triple decker yachts parked, or quintuple decker yachts packed in various yachting berths there. So give us your thoughts on Shinny and its history, and who you think has the game to be able to conquer that beast, or at least tiptoe around it without getting shredded.
Nobody has that game, really. You fall into Shinny US Open, I think. I mean, think about what Brooks Koepka did to go back to back in 2018 and do the double, to be, kind of take that mantle from Curtis Strange, the last guy to go back to back in US Opens. Barely got under par. I mean, on a golf course where you couldn't hit it within 20 feet of the flag. Or otherwise you'd probably go off of the green. And you can only assume, because this has kind of been the toxic relationship between the USGA and Shinnecock, that they're going to somehow lose control of the golf course at some point over the course of the weekend. And you're going to have one of those rounds where you go, okay, you're holding on for dear life. And you have to just kind of plot your way around a 7,500-ish yard golf course and just hope. And you got to have the best ball striking day of your life to be able to do it. Now that sounds like Scottie Scheffler, right? And if he were to complete the career Grand Slam at the US Open, he would do it on exactly his 30th birthday, which I think would be pretty interesting and certainly serendipitous to be able to do that. That's the kind of guy you're looking for. I mean, you've got to be able to hit the ball pretty far. It's not like Shinnecock's a short track. And you also have to have a great iron game. I don't think you have to be the best putter there's ever been, although all the credit in the world to Retief Goosen for taking 11 putts on the final 9 holes to beat Phil Mickelson 22 years ago. So, it's such a hard golf course under regular circumstances. It's an even harder golf course when they play the US Open. So, between this and Oakmont, you can take your pick for which one's the tougher of the two. I know a
Oh, I'll
lot
take
of. I
Oakmont.
don't know that I would, Jay. I actually don't know that I would.
You can make this harder when you're dumb and you don't water it. That's true too.
Now, if we were playing just country club conditions, I don't think we'd be having a conversation. But the
Right.
way the USGA seems to approach Shinnecock, I think
Yes.
they do it with the intention of making it darn close to the toughest golf course in the world. And I would expect the same again.
And then on the other side, you got Royal Birkdale, which has one of the hardest opening holes in major championship golf. But after that, it's got a very, fairly friendly front nine. The story is you go low on the front, you hold on for dear life on the back. But still, it gives out really good scores. And Americans tend to do very well at Birkdale. The last time we were there, we saw a phenomenal win by Jordan Spieth. What a fantastic story that was, watching him come from the middle of nowhere. He was coming from Scotland. He had hit that tee shot on 13 so far off. And yet he made a superb bogey to right the ship and then went on a streak of five under in four holes to race past the rest of the field like they were standing still, especially poor
Matt Kuchar, right? That was Kuchar.
Especially poor Matt Kuchar, yes, who was a bridesmaid once again. So, a very friendly golf course for Americans, and a course that's going to let a lot of people have a chance to win.
Yeah, it'll be an interesting week. I mean, I really like Birkdale as a golf course. Like you said, it's so welcoming the first nine holes, and then the gauntlet is laid. And everybody knows it, right? You know you've got to make your hay early and just kind of hang on. And that was the place where we saw the first man shoot a 62 in a major championship. Brandon Grace did it. What, third round, I think. Third or fourth round, I don't remember. But he got there, on a par 70 golf course, but he did it. 62 is 62. I don't care where you do it in a major. So
Oh, yeah.
it's certainly scorable. You've got to do it early, like you said. And then the last, half dozen holes are so good, just one after another, and you've got to be on your game to be able to finish it. And just like you said, it does seem to be an American friendly venue, right? I mean, think about Spieth, think about Marco Mira. There's another serendipity moment, right? You could have Justin Rose maybe win an Open Championship there, the place where it kind of all began in 1998. That would be pretty cool too. So,
Oh, sure. After you hold out that pitch shot 40 yards off the green, the stands thundered at that moment. The editor-in-chief of Golf Magazine told me everyone jumped at once. He thought they were going to collapse. It was such a moment when the stands just shook and everyone jumped for joy. I mean, it's so much fun to watch. All the greats that have won at Birkdale in the past as well, though. Norman won at Birkdale. Baker Finch won at Birkdale. Peter Thompson won at Birkdale. And on for all these decades and decades to come, because it is truly the most welcoming, not only for Americans, but also for the spectators, because they can walk around those mounds and they can see every single green and every single tee box without having to have those stupid periscopes and without having to worry about the guy in front of them unless he's a full foot taller than them. It makes for a terrific walking course for all of the fans. And so it'll be a really, really fun open, especially for those of us at GNN to get to go cover it.
Yeah, I mean, this is a pretty good rotation this year. I mean, I think Ronnemaker is kind of it's not unheralded, but relatively unknown to a lot of people. And hopefully they'll really, really enjoy it. It's a fabulous club. And obviously, Shinnecock and Birkdale speak for themselves.
Ryan, we will catch up with you on the other side of the PGA Championship. Thank you so much for coming on Jay Flemma Sports Report. It's always great to have you.
Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
All right, everybody, we'll be back with our next guest right after this. I am Jay Flemma. You're listening to the Golf News Net on iHeartRadio.